morning. May it please the court, counsel. In this case, we have an indication that my client applied for three different positions in a short span of time between September 2004 and March of 2005. She was denied all those positions. She had previously, in 2001, filed a complaint of discrimination, which had been settled. After she was denied the first position, and that was denial of a position in September 2004, she filed another complaint of discrimination. She then was considered for the position, a new position, October of 2004, and in that position, she was also denied that promotion, even though it was for a GS-9 position, and she was a GS-11. In the midst of that decision, in fact, before that decision was made, because the selection was made in March of 2005, the selecting official, Daniel Marsh, or at least one of the head persons in the selection process, had filed an affidavit against my client's claim that she was discriminated against with regard to the first denial of promotion. So he had clearly expressed an adverse opinion to my client's filing the complaint of discrimination in the first action. My client had applied for a third position, which became open in February of 2005, and that was at in a position where she the selecting official was a Mr. Chu. Mr. Chu was an official who she had complained against quite some time ago. This is the first time she had applied for a position with Mr. Chu since her former complaint and settlement.
It seems that there were, as these things go, some fairly objective, I would think, numbering systems that were used to rank the various applicants for these jobs, and a number of different people that were involved in the rankings. And in every case, as I understand it, the person with the highest score that percolated up out of this scoring system got the promotion. Is that correct?
No.
That's not correct.
No, it's not. And the reason it's not correct, we indicated in our brief and in our Rule 56 statement that they were all over the map, the different participants, as to how they went about ranking, who was the highest score,
But ultimately, they totaled up the scores from the different rankers, and the person that got the highest total score was selected for each of these positions.
Well, according to the selecting official, that was the case, but not according to the panel members. The panel members always, each one had different stories as to who had the highest scores or who didn't. It was really all over the map, and that's part of the problem with this case, because in order to prevail on a summary judgment, the facts have to be undisputed. They can't be a situation where the panel members are saying, we did it this way. The selecting official is saying, we did it that way.
But I thought the issue had to do with who composed the panel. You know, I understood your argument to be, you know, one person here knew about the prior complaint, you know, out of so many, and then in this panel, two people knew out of so. I mean, I thought it was more the you were complaining more about the makeup of the panel, not the ultimate result in terms of the scoring.
No, I wasn't complaining about the makeup of the panel per se.
I mean, that was one of the subtexts of your argument.
Correct. That was part of the, for example, Mr. Chu, who was a part of the last panel, number three, was a person that she had specifically complained against in a previous case. So clearly, his just being on the panel was a problem.
Right.
With regard to the second vacancy, where Mr. Marsh was on the panel, Mr. Marsh had participated in opposing, by an affidavit, the first claim that my client made of discrimination on the first promotion. So his being on that panel is an issue. But more importantly is the fact that Chu was the selecting official on the third one. Marsh based on some confusion, it's not entirely clear, was either the selecting official or had some leadership position with regard to the second and the first positions. So my problem is, first of all, with just what you've raised, Judge Evans, which is, what did they do? What was the way that they came about ranking in this procedure when the panel members are all over the map as to how they did it? The selecting official argues that, yes, we did it this way, but that conflicts with testimony that we got in the depositions of the other persons. In order to be able to ground a case based on summary judgment, it's required that there be no dispute. If there were no dispute, just as you said, that everyone that was selected was the top person there was no dispute about how they were ranked, then I would say you'd have a point. But that's not the case here. What we have.
So let me just, on this Marsh, you know, Daniel Marsh selected this Diane Little, right?
I'm sorry?
Daniel Marsh.
Marsh was on the first two promotion announcements. If I go by the last numbers, that's 144 and 011.
So what? Give us something more specific. Because see, in your brief, you say panel members gave conflicting accounts of what occurred. What? Give us an example of a conflicting account.
If you look at my brief,
between it's hard to keep all of these straight.
I understand. Between pages 7 and page 10, it outlines all of the disputes that took place. In other words, one panel member says it went this way, another panel member says it went that way, another panel member says, I don't remember what happened. Those are the various disputes as to what took place with regard to the panel determinations, and even as to how they ranked them and whether they even had conversations in concert when they were making a determination to rank them. So the problem is it's all over the map as to what it is that actually took place. One last point I want to make before I save my rebuttal time.
You're heavily into your rebuttal time.
Okay. Very quickly. Counsel argues I didn't raise the cat's paw theory with regard to her argument in court. Cat's paw theory was raised because the judge indicated in his opinion that all five members have to know about what took place. I'd like to reserve the remainder for rebuttal.
All right. Ms. Wallace.
May it please the court, counsel. There are three legal bases individually that this court can affirm the district court's decision in this case to grant summary judgment on the retaliation claim. The first one is that Ty's arguments regarding the three selections were tainted with retaliation are just that. They're just argument. There's no evidence whatsoever to support them. We have the documentation from the panel members. Supervisors were selected from all over the country who supervised individual positions like this. They were given the packets of materials that the people submitted in their application. They rated and ranked those applications. They got on a conference call, submitted their rankings. They were totaled and divided by the number of panel members, and the highest person was selected. There were no interviews. Panel members didn't discuss the candidates with each other. It was a very sterile procedure, except for the last procedure where there was an interview process. And I think Mr. Andre discusses that briefly in his brief. Much of what counsel argues in his brief and much of what he says today here wasn't raised in the district court. Neither the cat's paw theory, where one panel member through actions or words taints an entire selecting panel, all of that is forfeited. It's raised for the first time on appeal. And he never argued anything whatsoever in the district court regarding that the actual selections were really a pretext to deny the positions that plaintiff applied for and not give her the positions because of prior filings with the EEO. That was never challenged, and that's just a completely independent basis on which this court can affirm the district court.
And on these inconsistencies, because I had looked at pages 7 through 10 in the, you know, counsel's original brief, and it seemed to me that a lot of it was people couldn't specifically recall each step of the process, but I was having a hard time determining where the real contradictions were. What's your... I mean, and I recognize the whole deposition testimony is not here.
Right. The depositions were taken years after these people made the selection. Many of the panel members didn't know Ms. Tai. They didn't know what her race, what her sex, maybe her sex, but or that she applied for prior positions and was denied and filed EEO actions. They also really didn't remember the process. It was from a long time ago. They were deposed in 2008. These selections were made in 2004, and they merely relied on their affidavits that they submitted at the EEO level, stating that they individually rated and ranked each of the applicants, and whatever score they gave at that time for those applicants was the score that they truly believed these candidates deserved, and they turned it in to the selecting official, who then had a conference call with them to make sure everyone was in agreement. And it turned out that in the first two positions, all of the people who rated and ranked pretty much were in agreement that the person that was selected was the best candidate for the job. There was no evidence whatsoever that any retaliation came into play at all. If there are no further questions, I would just ask that the court affirm the district court's opinion in this case, which we believe was thoroughly analyzed all of the evidence. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Andre.
Again, as we indicated with regard to the cat's paw theory, that addresses the district court's determination. In its opinion, was
yeah,
it raised?
Raise that. That was not raised as an issue in the district court.
It wasn't raised as an issue on the memorandum by the defendant. It was raised for the first time by the court when the court says that there's a requirement that all of the persons on the panel have to have knowledge of the complaints. And so I was addressing the court's statement with regard to that fact, that is, that all of the panel members have to be aware of the complaint in order for you to have a viable retaliation claim. Our argument was that the cat's paw theory says that's not true. You can have someone who's in charge who is aware of the complaints and who influences the others. So my argument addressed a point that was raised by the judge, but it was never raised by the defendant, so I didn't argue a point that was never raised by the defendant before the judge issued his opinion. With regard to the issue of whether or not the individual simply did not recall or whether or not they expressed different opinions, there were different opinions expressed as to whether there were calls made, how they ranked them, and the ways that they ranked them. But even if the issue was whether they recalled or not, that's still a conflict between saying we did it this way when, in fact, the person on the panel says, I don't know what we did. So with regard to those issues, we feel that, and on the pretext argument is also made by the arguments concerning the prima facie case. It's conceded that my client was treated adversely and that she engaged in protected activity. And so the only argument has to do with nexus. And we're showing in the prima facie case and in the pretext argument that there were persons who were aware in short periods of time that my client had engaged in this activity. And you can presume on the basis of that, a connection between the complaints and the retaliation. For those reasons, we act that the summary judgment be reversed and that my client be allowed to have a trial. Thank you.
If the case is taken under advisement.